everybody. Welcome back to the Creative Gap Podcast. Today we have New Jersey resident, artist, rapper, Colin Henry. With four albums already under his belt, his latest album, released in 2022, Dark Times and White Lines, and he also has a new single out called Geronimo. I'm excited to chat with Colin about his beginnings, how he found music, what and who inspires him, his process, the music business, and the path to pursue music in today's world. Colin and I have a close background. I spent a few months with him in 2022 documenting the making of his latest album. So I got to see firsthand what it was like to prep for an album, the process of recording one, mixing, mastering. But what impressed me the most was his work ethic and vibe he wanted to maintain the entire process of making the album. If you enjoy the podcast and want to support the show, check us out on Patreon. By joining our community, you can help support the podcast, which will directly contribute to the growth of the show and guests. Click the link in the show notes to join our Patreon community. Thank you. Make sure to follow us on Instagram for updates on upcoming guests and check out our YouTube channel for the full video portion of the show. So let's welcome to the show, Colin Henry. Hi, Colin. Welcome.
Hi, Carlo. Thank you for having me.
So it's been a while. It's good to see you. You look healthy. You look good.
Thank you, man. Same to you. It's great to see you.
So your new single came out. Was it Geronimo?
Geronimo, yeah.
Yeah. How's that been?
Awesome, honestly. It's been creeping up 15, 20,000 streams in between there. First week and a half, 2 weeks of the release.
Amazing.
So that's usually, you know, I'll get a little bit less than that. So this is like kind of gaining momentum and steam and stuff like that. So.
Right. Do you think that's from, you know, it coming off of the album a little bit?
I think possibly, yes. I think it's more about so staying consistent. Mm. So we had, because I say we, as in you worked on the album with me. So I had the album release in October of last year. So it's been a little bit over a year. And then, you know, just dropped 8 songs this year, with the 8th being Geronimo, which just dropped, you know, 2 weeks ago. So I think just the consistency of releasing, constantly releasing, constantly releasing, and you build momentum, et cetera.
How many years has this been for you now?
Making music?
Yeah, total. Like, go all the way back. When was the first time you started, and like, why did you even start to begin with? I don't know if I know too much of your backstory, to be honest.
Before we go forward, can I take this off?
Yeah, of course. Oh. Yeah, absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, just took off his shirt, first layer.
Yes, first layer.
Give it 10 more minutes, the next layer is going off.
So, how did I start?
Well,
I've always been a fan of music, always been a fan of hip-hop. Well, music in general, but hip-hop was kind of the genre that I gravitated towards the most growing up. Do you want me to start from there, or do you want me to start from when
Honestly, I'm just curious about, like, your origins of deciding to make music, because I know a few people that in high school would do, like, rap battles or, like, in the cafeteria. Was that you?
I wasn't doing rap battles, but it did start in high school. Freestyles, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what really started was, it was weird because I always, like, was very good at just writing. I used to write stories and read books. Mm-hmm. Like, when I was a kid, like, you know, I'd obviously play sports and do all that type of stuff. But then I would also, you know, my stepmother would get me, like, you know, those booklets from, like, the dollar store or something that are, like, the crossword puzzles and the word searches. Mm-hmm. And I just like to, like, do that stuff. So I always had, like, a knack for words and just, I was really good at English.
Were you good at English?
Very good at English. That was, like, my best subject in school. So, you know, that's kind of where it started. And then one day I just got off the bus from school. This is before I had my license. I think I was 15 or 16 years old. I went home and, like, I would always just go on YouTube, listen to music, chill out, maybe play Xbox with my friends, whatever. If it wasn't during, like, you know, baseball or basketball season.
Sure.
So I went and I just started, like, listening to instrumentals and stuff like that. Like just randomly.
Like tight beats on YouTube?
No, like, you know, there's a song
or
called...
Or just, like, legit instrumentals.
Legit, like, so, of famous songs at the time. Of popular songs at the time.
Mm.
And for whatever, it was, like, something weird came over me. I just, like, went on YouTube. I was like, I'm going to look up instrumentals today.
Mm.
So, Headbands by B.O.B. Was the popular song at that particular moment in time. So I looked up the instrumental to that, and then I just, like, started writing, and that was kind of wasn't the first time I ever wrote something, like, music-wise, but it was, like, I did it when I was like maybe 6 or 7 years old, but I didn't know what I was writing about. I was just writing. Right. Like I said, I liked to write. I was good at English. But that was the first time where I purposely went home, you know, looked up an instrumental, looked up a beat, like with music behind it, and actually wrote to it. And then I went to school the next day or the next week, I don't remember, and kind of recited it on the bus on the way to the school with my friends. And then when they started to like it, I saw the reactions. Then like that weekend, I think there was a party or something. And then in front of like 20 or 30 people.
Oh, I, you like, went live.
Yeah, recited that freestyle that I wrote. And then everyone was like, yo, this is actually like really, really good. Like, we really like this. So I was like, all right, maybe I'll try and go home the next week and, you know, write another one. You got the bug. I got the bug right there. That was it.
How was the first song?
I mean, I don't remember. According to my friends, they still like it to this day.
Do you
day.
Have a recording of it?
No.
You have nothing? No.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, I wish you did.
I think I wrote it on paper. It wasn't even in my phone in my notes or anything.
So after that, did you realize that, did you initially realize, like, after you did that live, you know, thing at the party and your friends started liking it, did you realize that this was a potential career option, or is this just something that you wanted to see further? Or you wanted to investigate more?
It was never like a career thing at that moment in time. It was never like, this is, you know, gonna be what I want to do for a living. It was like, all right, I love music, right? I love writing. So you put two and two together. It's like, oh, all right. You know, I do that one thing, the one freestyle. Then I come back the next week, do another one. And then you, like you said, you catch the bug, you get better at it. And then you're like, before you even realize it, you're just like, it's a hobby, obviously, at that point, but you're like, I'm getting good reactions out of this. Like, I'm getting better every time I write new stuff. And it just, like, just, it was a domino effect. Just, you know, song after song, freestyle after freestyle.
Who'd you gain inspiration from? Because when you're writing, you obviously have listened to other artists before. You may have liked a few, or, like, where do you think your style may have stemmed from originally? Do you think you could pinpoint to anyone or any?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Yeah. The Beatles, just in terms of like songwriting and feeling. My dad put me onto the Beatles when I was a kid. I think they're the best band. They're my favorite band of all time. My dad used to listen to U2 and Pearl Jam and Neil Young. Then on the flip side, my mom used to listen to like the Jackson 5 and Michael Jackson. She used to listen to like Bon Jovi and Prince.
Sounds like my mom. Yeah. Honestly, dude, it sounds like my parents. My dad, I used to listen to Aerosmith, Led Zeppelin, all those. And my mom would be Jackson,
like
Michael
pop,
Jackson,
like more pop
Bon
music.
Jovi. Yeah, it's literally the same.
You know, Bruce, my mom's a big fan of Bruce, obviously, like around this area too.
What about rap? Anyone in particular influence you?
Like so that was my first introduction to music.
Yeah.
And then obviously you have people like Eminem and 50 Cent and really early 2000s, T.I. and Lil Wayne and just everyone like that. But like when I really started to get into hip hop and wanting to learn, because I was always like, I want to learn about this genre. Mm. It was never like, let me start rapping. Or let me start making hip hop music and like, let me just, you know, I wanted to learn about the genre, where, you know, the history of it. I was so fascinated with this genre of music and just everything that came with it, the fashion, the just everything that encompassed the culture of hip hop. I was so interested in learning the beginnings of it where I was like, there was a class my freshman year of high school. It was called Freshman Experience. The whole point of the class, you had to write one paper. That was the only assignment throughout the whole semester or whatever it
really?
Was.
Really?
Swear to God.
Interesting.
You had to do research on it and you had to, you know, do drafts, rough
Could it
drafts.
Be any topic of your choice?
Any topic of your choice. Okay. I decided to write that paper on Biggie Smalls.
Amazing.
This is when I was 14, 15 years old. So it's like, and you can, my brother, everyone will tell you nowadays, I knew everything about Biggie. I knew, you know, his full name. I knew his birthday, the day he passed away. I knew, you know, he got, you know, murdered. He got shot. I knew what the gun was. I knew, like, I was looking into stuff with, like, Tupac and what happened with him when he got shot, whatever. So it was just, but even before that, I'm, like, talking, like, in the 70s with, you know, Kool Herc and Grandmaster Flash and all these, you know, just the beginning of the culture into the 80s into the 90s. And then obviously me growing up in the early 2000s, I was alive to, you know, experience the hip hop culture at that time. But it was important for me to go back first and, you know, learn everything, learn as much as I could, and just get as much, you know, inspiration as I possibly could as I started to kind of, you know, embark on this journey of, oh, I'm going to be a rapper. I'm going to be a songwriter. I'm going to make hip hop music. Like, let me make sure that I have, you know, all my ducks in a row. Let me make sure that, you know, I know what the hell I'm talking about and what I'm doing, even though it's from my own life experience. I need to garner some of that, like, past energy in the past. I don't even know the word to say. I just wanted to feel like I was doing, you know, my due diligence. Sorry.
Amazing.
So,
what after high school, or even what year was it again when you first started? You did that party. Was that sophomore year? You said
Sophomore, junior year of high school. So I graduated 2014. So that had to be 2012, 2013.
So if you can move forward like a couple years after, maybe 2 or 3 years after that. Where did you stand with music then? Did you then think it was a path that you wanted to pursue more than just a hobby? Or even now, do you still, what do you consider music for you? Like,
I make, you know, when I started making like pretty decent money with it, that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to put more focus into this. This is more than just, it was, you know, a hobby at first, obviously. And even when I started to make a little money with it, it was still a hobby. Then it was like, all right, this is like a big opportunity for me to do what I love for a living.
Then how did you learn the business side of it? Because I went to college for music production, music business, and, you know, what is it, 360 deals and all that stuff. It's like, you don't get taught that immediately. You kind of have to go through it. You have to maybe find mentors or something. Like, how did you navigate the business side as you were coming up?
So I went to school as well. It wasn't for music. So just so I can give, you know, a little bit of context and kind of, you know, bridge everything together. It was a hobby throughout all of high school, music. When I got out of high school, I went to Monmouth University. And I was a double major in marketing and management. So I went to college in business, you know, learning marketing and management. And not only would that help me with my music, which was kind of like in the back of my mind, it wasn't on the forefront of my mind, like, hey, you know, I'm going to go to college so I can be better at business-wise for music. Right. It was more like, you know, music was a hobby at that point when I got into college. This is around 2014. And then, you know, I started just getting really into it when I was at school. And then I was like, well, I'm majoring in marketing and management. Now I started to kind of put the pieces together. I learned how to like record myself and got my own microphone, got my own laptop, got FL Studio.
Nice.
Yeah, that was my first DAW that I ever had. I never
understood FL, dude. I couldn't do it. I still to this day, I rock Ableton.
Ableton?
But I can never understand.
Everyone has their thing. I haven't, that was the first DAW that I ever used was Fruity Loops. And then after that, it was Pro Tools when I started to go to Ray's. When I was in college is when I started to go to Ray's house. Mm. So I think that was around 2016. A friend of mine that I grew up with, went to school with, you know, went to Ray's. I was recording and doing my own thing. Like I said, I learned how to record myself.
And at this point, did you have any music out like on iTunes, Spotify? Like how do you have albums? SoundCloud. Okay. Yeah.
The SoundCloud days.
Yeah.
The SoundCloud era. So crazy. Yeah, no, I did. The first songs that I recorded myself and mixed, you know, myself were put on SoundCloud, and I remember the feeling. But it was never like, you know, I'm going to be, you know, famous. I never wanted to be, I just wanted to make music because I loved it. And then, you know, everything that came after it, it was, you know, just kind of a product of, I guess,
right,
you know, the hard work and just doing it over and over daily. And then, you know, when you get your first 1,000 plays or so, I remember getting my first 1,000 plays on SoundCloud for one of those songs. And it was like the second song I ever put out in my life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's it, was like, I saw like, I don't, wouldn't necessarily consider that success, but at the time that's what it felt like.
Mm.
Still, even to this day, 1,000, you know, streams or views or plays is,
I mean, I say the same thing too about just if you think about 1,000 plays, and digitally it might not look like a lot, but if you had 1,000 people in front of you,
it would be insane.
That's insane.
If you had 100 people.
Exactly.
You look around the room and you would be like, wow, this is a lot more people than I would
thought. And I think of that, and it puts it into perspective a lot when you think you're not, you know, progressing maybe. I think it's important to look at things like that, because I say the same thing sometimes about views of like the stuff that I put out, or like even following sometimes, is if I had this many people in front of me, I would be overwhelmed. Yeah. This amount of people, it's crazy.
Absolutely. And it's never about like the numbers.
No.
And that's not like my point. It's just like the feeling of working on something and an idea that comes from your mind, like this podcast and everything. This came from your mind. Mm-hmm. Like you had this vision, you put it together, right? You record it, you do all this hard work, and then you put it out. And it's just cool to get the feeling of, okay, somebody's on the other end.
I 100%
you know,
agree.
Listening, yes. No matter if it's 100 views or, you know, 1,000 views, like we just said, if you put all those people in a room, like we were saying, it's...
Right. Yeah, it really makes a difference. Awesome. I say sometimes, as long as I can get one person to feel something from what I'm doing, it's an accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about your style of writing, maybe how it's evolved from when you've started to where you are now. How do you think... That's okay. Do you think your writing is like directly influenced by the trajectory of your life outside of music?
Now it is. Yeah. Mm. So when I first started writing, it was more, like I said, freestyles. And when I first started writing and making music, it was more so I just wanted to be kind of respected as a rapper. So what I mean by that is like I was really all in on the punchlines, the metaphors, like, you know, not really necessarily in the very beginning, not necessarily trying to tell stories, but trying to prove to people and really prove to myself, I guess, at the end of the day, that I could actually put words together that make sense and that are witty, mm-hmm. and that not necessarily are talking about like my life. And the way that it evolved was and I was doing really fast flows and really, you know, it was really more focused on
the technical, the technique.
Yeah, it was more like, yeah, the technique of like putting so many words together, mm-hmm. and doing it in a fast paced thing and having cool, you know, metaphors and cool things to say. It wasn't so much, you know, about my life or, mm-hmm. or any type of thing like that. And then it evolved into that. Still a little fast, still, you know, with a flow. And I still have that to this day. But then I started to kind of slow down what I was talking about. Kind of like, you know, less is more type of thing.
Right.
So, and that makes it even harder. It's harder to write that way. Because anyone can put a bunch of words together. Yeah. Anybody can. Yeah. Anybody can be a rapper. You know how many rappers there are today? You know how many artists there are today?
Yeah. So I think that's really important. The point that you bring up is storytelling.
Yes.
And to correlate that to kind of what I do in my industry is there's so many people out there that can shoot something and make it look beautiful. Like the image itself can look great. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people can do that. But what a lot of people lack is the ability to tell a story and also make something look great as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's similar to what you're saying. Is like people can, you know, rap fast. They can put the two and two words together, make it sound great. But are they actually telling a story that can resonate with somebody? I think that is really what can make you like unique.
Exactly. And listen, everyone has a story. Everyone has a unique story. It's just how you kind of present yourself and present your story and how, you know, your style and all these different things go into it, and your how you use your voice, how you enunciate things, how you, it's just so technical. And I used to do that and just put all the words together, but then when you really start to dig, you know, deep down, and you're like, I want to tell my story, because when it's all said and done, when, you know, either I'm dead or like when I stop making music, but I will be dead when I stop making music, because I'll never stop making music right. while I'm, you know, here physically on this planet. You want to, you know, tell your story. You just want to tell people of what you've been through, what you've seen, what you've experienced, maybe, or what a loved one has experienced that you've seen and how it affected you. And, you know, all the stuff that goes into, you know, how to tell a story or tell someone else's story, mm-hmm. and they don't have an outlet you know, they're not an artist. They don't, you know, a cinematographer. They're not, you know, a rapper. They're not a singer. They don't play instruments. So they don't have an outlet to express their life and their experience. So, like, I like to take that sometimes and, you know, kind of put it in with my,
right.
you know, with my journey.
It gives other people a voice.
It gives other people a voice, yes.
Right. That's amazing. Did you find, like, a pushback from maybe family or friends when you wanted to pursue music? Were they supportive of you? I always find this to be, like, an interesting topic because some people get, like, their parents were never a fan of it, or even to this day, they still don't want to hear it. But
they'll get pushback.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious what yours was like.
Well, like I said, I went to college, and when I started to, like, you know, get my degree, and that's when I started to really get into rapping. I already had kind of that safety net. So from my personal experience, my dad and my mom and my brother, they all still to this day love it. My dad supports me. My dad's like my A&R.
I love that.
I swear to God. He wears my merch all the time. He's going to, like, you know, he's retired now, so he's got a lot of free time. So he'll go and all these different, you know, bars and stuff like that, and where there's live musicians just around Ocean and Monmouth County. Oh, have you listened to my son's music? Blah, 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 here. You know, just, he's like an A&R to me. He's like, I want you to, you know, get in contact with this person and do this. And he's always playing it. Like, I'll walk into his house and, you know, he'll be in the kitchen. He'll be in another room and he'll be playing my music while, you know, and he doesn't know that I'm there.
Wow.
So when I walk in, I hear him playing my music. I'm like, what are you doing?
Wow. That's amazing.
So my brother's the same way. My brother is always, like, making sure that I'm on top of my, you know, shit.
Yeah.
He's always like, are you going, when's the last time you went to the studio? When's the last time you went to Ray's? When was the last time you talked to, you know, Ray? When was the last time you wrote a song? And then obviously I have, you know, other artists and people that are, I consider family as well. Like Dom, for example, me and him talk daily about just everything. Marketing, business, music, obviously mostly music, but like.
What is your perspective on, like, you know, like Dom or other people and the relationship between competitive versus collaborative and, like, friends? Because, like, you're all in the same industry. You're all not necessarily, you're not competing, but there is a sense of that in a way, like.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, how do you manage that relationship?
I feel like the competition part of it is, like, a friendly competition.
Mm.
We want to see each other succeed no matter what, right? Nobody, in terms of a competitive sense, nobody wants to see, you know, you don't want to be more successful and see somebody else not be successful. Like, you all want to be successful at the same time. If, you know, you want to see your friends be successful, you want to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the competitive stuff with that, it's not really, you know, we all want to see each other succeed. In terms of, like, being on songs together, of course, like, Dom knows this as well, the same thing. Like, we want to make the best song possible if we're collaborating, right? And that's the thing. We have such a comfort level with each other, and we have so much experience being in the studio together, where everything is just, it's like nonverbal. Like, we know exactly where we want to go with the song, what I know, what he's thinking, he knows what I'm thinking. And, like, that's where the collaborative effort, you know, comes in. But in terms of the competitive, you know, side of it, like, yeah, I want to write a better verse than everyone. I want to have the best verse on the song. I want to have the most memorable part of the song in there. But then I also want Dom or whoever it is to come equally as hard on the song.
I think it pushes you when they come hard. You gotta
come
harder.
It's a healthy competition. It's never like,
it's never combative.
It's never like that. But like rap is a sport to me, at least that's how I look at it. It's competitive. It's always been competitive. Like, even kind of tying back to when I was doing research on the beginnings of hip hop, it was always competitive. DJs versus DJs, you know, breakdancer versus breakdancer, graffiti artist versus graffiti artist, who had the better art? And then obviously the rappers doing early rap battles, who has the better verse, who has the better this, the better that. So it's always a competition. It's always a sport, but it's a healthy kind of dynamic when you're like, all right, I'm going to give you my A game. I'm going to give you 150% every time I'm writing a verse on this song. And it only makes the other person,
come harder too.
Come harder as well.
Amazing.
So.
I guess on the side of the competitive, I'm curious about the mental side of it, because Do you ever fear or feel that maybe you're not where you hoped you would be at this point?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's kind of, I mean, to be honest with you, it eats you alive sometimes.
Oh man, I feel that.
Yeah. And you're like, am I not doing enough? Mm. Am I, you know, letting, cause a lot of people, family and friends, I mean, at least in my experience, once they kind of, you know, fully accepted it. And like I mentioned before, they fully accepted it pretty much from the start, because like I said, I was also going to college and yeah. They're like, all right, well, if this music thing doesn't work out, but then I started to get really good at it, get attention, money. And they were like fully in on the music thing. And they still are to this day. But, yeah, I'm sorry. What was the question again?
No, it's just, I'm curious about just how you kind of deal with, you know, maybe feeling like you're not good enough, or you're not where you hoped you would be. And that's something I struggle with all the time. So I'm curious.
I feel like I'm like this is what I was kind of circling back to. I just lost track for a second. I feel like I'm kind of maybe letting them down. They have these big mm-hmm. expectations of me now that when they, like I said, when they accepted it, they were like, all right. And then all these good things started to happen to me in the music, you know, realm,
right.
In my, you know, career with music. And they're thinking like, you know, and if I don't meet certain expectations, I guess, like if I don't take that next step, or if my next song isn't as big as my last song, or, you know, whatever the case is, then it's like, and I don't know if it's in their mind, I don't want to speak for them, but it's almost like, I feel like I'm regressing or I'm not, you know, where I should be in the, like, I feel like I should be a certain, you know, at a certain point, right. Or I should have. And sometimes I do get caught up in the numbers. I can't lie about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And that's never healthy, at least from my experience.
From an artist's perspective, I think it's really unhealthy. And I struggle with it all the time.
Looking at other people's numbers, yeah. Saying, why does this person have this many streams? Or why does this person have this many monthly listeners?
And right.
I don't. Or why are they getting these opportunities? And I'm not. And that's the wrong way to look at it. And if you catch, and I'll catch myself in that sometimes, I don't have to just constantly ground myself. There's a lot of grounding and a lot of constant reminders. And obviously, you know this as well. Like, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. You're exactly where you need to be at this moment in time.
So
you're doing
hard.
Everything right. Yeah. You know, maybe, you know, you might screw up here and there. And
but that's part of it.
Yeah.
But that's part of it.
That's part of the whole process.
Yeah.
That's how you learn. That's how you get better. Mm. Without any of those things, you would not be here today, like where you are.
Right. I'm curious about this. This is something I noticed about myself. When I'm in a place of fulfillment, or I'm feeling like I'm progressing, I released a project, it's doing great. I'm feeling successful, right? Like at this point in time.
And that's all subjective too.
Exactly.
It's whatever you think success is.
Completely agree. And when I feel that, I'm in that mode. When I look at other people and they're doing awesome things, I feel super supportive. I feel great. But to flip that, when I'm not busy, or if I'm not doing great, or if I'm feeling a lack of fulfillment and I see other people doing great things, I have a total different mindset towards that. I almost feel like envious, feel guilty, or I feel jealous.
Like you're not doing enough.
Like I'm not doing enough, but it's totally based on where I feel like I am and what I'm doing. I don't know if that's like an issue. I don't know if I could fix that.
I have the same. In my opinion, I think it might stem from some insecurities maybe or something like within your art.
Yeah.
I'm saying, or within your work, like you see someone else do this and you're like, am I not working hard enough? Mm. Like, is my content or my music or whatever it is it not good enough?
Right. I think that's where a lot of it stems from. I think it's, I'm really hard on myself.
Yeah. When you're a perfectionist at whatever you do, there's no such thing as a perfect anything.
Right.
Not a perfect person. There's not a perfect piece of art. There's nothing that you can do that can be perfect.
Right.
But as long as you're kind of striving for that every time, then you're going to be fine. But then that also comes with, it's like a double-edged sword. It also comes with, oh, is it not good enough?
Exactly.
It's never-ending battle.
I made a video and just like, I did like a solo podcast and I talked about, because I run through something recently where I failed at something really bad and it was a huge setback and it haunted me. It's still haunting me to this day.
And this is recently?
Recent, yeah.
Okay.
And I talked about it because it was almost like a therapy session for me, just like talking it out. Mm-hmm. I realized that I hold such a high standard for myself, my art, my whatever I do, podcast, YouTube, DP work, whatever, mm-hmm. That being super ambitious and holding yourself to that high standard comes with the territory of you failing a lot more because, or you setting yourself up for disappointment more because of how high you expect something to be, mm-hmm. or how perfect you think something could be. And I think I realize that the double-edged sword to that is you see more failure, you see more disappointment, but you also see more success because you're taking more risk. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know where I'm going with that, but
I'm
curious,
agree.
Like, just what your take is on that, and I guess risk, really. I think because what you do, what we do is pretty risky.
Risky.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no, like, you could, you know, this could not pan out, you know, next week. It's not like a 9-to-5 job where, like, doesn't matter what you do at work, doesn't matter how your performance is necessarily, you're still going to get a paycheck at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not, like, in demand per se, or if you're, you know, art or whatever it is you're working on isn't up to a standard, like you're not gonna be able to pay your bills. Exactly. You're not gonna be able to make any money. So then what happens? Then you gotta actually do something that requires that. It takes your time away from mm-hmm. your passion and what you want. So yeah, taking the risk is like, that's why I admire anybody who tries to do anything like this.
Yeah.
Cause not only is it hard to do, like it's hard to write a song. Mm-hmm. It's hard to set up a podcast. I know everyone thinks it's not. Like you have to do research. Brutal. There's a lot of things that go into it. People are like, oh, you just set up a camera and talk. Like, no, it's not like that. Like there's a lot of research and stuff that goes in behind it. There's a lot of hard work. And any creative passion that you have, it comes with hard work. Mm. It's not easy. And the industry is even more cutthroat. It's harder to break through in the industry. Mm. Any industry, any creative industry.
Yeah.
So I admire anyone who takes that risk, and you're going to fail 99% of the time, probably.
Right.
Most people fail, if not all people who try this, fail 99% of the time.
I think that's a perfect segue into this topic. With the risk that comes with doing this, I get nervous sometimes of what the future could look like of having a family. Mm-hmm. And you are going to be a dad.
I am, yes.
I'm super stoked for you, dude.
Thank that's you. Like I'm really, super stoked.
Are you excited?
I am.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I was a little nervous at first, but like this was in the very beginning. Right, now that it's almost here, I'm like,
when is the baby due again?
January 19th.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, no, like actually 3 weeks. Like well, I might get a call during this podcast. Like,
oh wow.
Going into labor. Like you gotta get out here.
So when you found out that you're having a baby, did it shift your mindset into like what you need to do as a provider? Or like, did it shift your mindset into pursuing music or whatever?
It's like, it's a switch that I've never kind of felt or experienced in my life before. And it was weird because like a lot of people, and this is like from what I've heard, a lot of people were saying, not a lot of people, a couple of people, I'm not going to over exaggerate. They were saying like, they thought it was going to take my focus away from music. Yeah, like he's not gonna want to work on music anymore.
Well, that's
he's
what I was curious about. Was did you feel that when you found out you were gonna have a kid that music was gonna be on the back burner now, that you needed to focus on something that was more sustainable?
No, not at all. The switch was
I love that.
The switch was I'm gonna have a baby. I need to go 100 times harder than I was before. I need to write a song right now. I need to write a song tonight. I need to go look up beats for 4 hours. I need to call Ray. Hey, what's your schedule like next week? I'm coming in. You know, I need to hit up a producer that I know. Hey, I've been wanting to buy beats from you for like 2 months, but I was, let's work out a deal. We'll do percentages, whatever you want to do. We'll talk out the business side of it. Bam, send me the beats over. I already have the songs written. Let's go. I'm putting out 20 songs next year.
Wow.
You know, like, That was the thinking. Like, I want to put out a song at least once every 3 weeks, once a month, and then I'll put, maybe a collection of songs here and there throughout the year, 3-4 songs a piece. But, like, it made me want to go
way harder.
Harder because not only do you want to have a more sustainable, you know,
of course.
Life, obviously, and like we were saying, it's very risky what we do.
Mm.
especially to make like an income and make this a career yeah. rather than a hobby. It's a lot of money. It's just like, I want to be someone that my daughter like looks up to.
Oh my gosh, it's gonna be a daughter?
Yes, I'm having a girl.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Do you have a name?
Luna.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
You're gonna have a little girl.
I am, man. So I'm gonna be a girl dad. And I'm so excited, but I wanna be someone, and that like the fact that it's a girl, that I'm having a girl and I'm having a daughter, is like, it makes you wanna be like, she's gonna look up to me because I'm her dad. Right. And what is that gonna look like for her? Mm. Right? I wanna be someone who's successful in what they do, and following they took a risk following their passion. There's like a lot of, in my opinion, like admirable qualities about taking that risk and doing something you love, and it like working out after years and years of working at it and failing and learning and just everything that comes with it. And then you break through whatever that is. Like we said, success is subjective.
Of course.
So whatever that success is to me, and for me, it would be like making a sustainable living, getting respect from my peers and other people that do music. Kind of, it's not that I necessarily care what other people think, but I guess there is, I would lie if I said that there's not a little part of me that wants that acceptance.
Right.
So when I was doing, you know, the research in hip hop, and I always respected the people that came before me. I respected the Nas's and the Jay-Z's and the Wu-Tang Clans and the Big Puns and the Big L's, et cetera. I could go on for days, the Andre 3000s, everyone. And I just wanted to like get to a point where those that are still alive, those legends in hip hop that are still alive, and the Eminems and the 50 Cents, all them, I want to be able to make it to one point where they like acknowledge the fact that I can rap. That was all I ever wanted from the beginning. That was really it. And then obviously the priorities change as your life evolves. And now I just want to make a sustainable living. I still want that respect.
Right.
I still want that acknowledgement from my heroes and my peers in this genre and in music in general, really. But like, I just want to be someone who can provide for my daughter. I want her to, you know, find a creative passion, whether it's music or not. Yeah. You know, it's like a big responsibility. And that's the switch that I was talking about. The switch happens and all those thoughts creep in your mind.
Oh. Was it immediate?
Immediate.
Really?
Yeah. And it was just like, I'm not kidding, it like
overwhelmed,
lit a fire under my ass. Like the next day I was like, Ray, what's your availability next week?
Wow.
I'm going into the studio, like let's go. Dom, like I'm coming over, you know, tomorrow morning or whatever it is. I'll come over in a couple of days whenever you're free. Let's go, let's record, let's produce something, let's do something. So it was like immediate. And it was, and it's been that way ever since. So it's been, what, 7-8 months, something like that?
Yes. Was it 9 months for a baby to come?
9 months, yeah. So when but we found out probably like a month or two in. So yeah, probably the last 7 months. But that's like a constant. And you do have your days.
Of course.
You know, everyone has their days where they're not completely motivated. But then that's when the discipline comes in.
Speaking of motivated, I was going to wait for the song Motivation. Talk about that, but yeah, that song popped off. That one went crazy.
Oh yeah, song. That's the biggest song that I have. Biggest moneymaker. Biggest.
I was gonna say it's on NBA 2K. It got played. UFC. Someone was walking out a UFC fight.
Yeah, Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah,
like, walked out.
Did you think this song was gonna pop off like this?
No. The whole thing was me and Ray were like, let's just get it on the video game. Like
was that what the intention was when you were writing it?
Yeah. So like the actual intention of the song, I remember I wrote it at my mom's house on the couch. I was just sitting on the couch and I was like, you know, I saw United Masters, the company.
Okay.
And that's the company that like gets me all those sync placements.
Right.
So I hadn't had, they're like a distribution company.
So sync placements, is that like licensing?
Yeah, okay. Sync licensing. So whatever visual, like if it's gets played on a commercial or whatever, you have your music in the background that's synced. So yeah, I was like, they had a NBA 2K thing, right? And I was like, excuse me. I was like, wow, this is like a great opportunity to get my music out there. I've played, you know, that video game my whole life. I played 2K my whole life. Madden, 2K, all the Call of Duty, all those games. And I was like, wouldn't it be like amazing to get a song on there, obviously. So I went with the intention, yes, to get it on the game. And the thing is it didn't even get onto the game that I wanted it to get onto. So that this was 2K21, I believe, or it might have been 2K20, the game. Mm-hmm. And I made the song in October 2019. The game came out like a month after, and I didn't get on the soundtrack to that game. So I was like, damn, whatever. And the song was getting a little bit of streams and a little bit of, you know, whatever. And I was like, all right, it's cool. Like, I really like the song. I think it's a great song for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for that. Yeah. And then the next year, the NBA started using it on their Twitter. So every highlight, like weekly, it was insane. Like every week there was different highlights from the games that day.
What did you feel when you first saw that first highlight?
Oh, it was like it was the biggest accomplishment I'd ever had in music at that point. You know, I had songs with a couple, but before that, my accomplishments were the amount of plays I got, because I was very invested into that portion of it at that point, which was, you know, not the right thing at that point. I still made music because I loved making music, but after I was so invested in the numbers and and that just comes with learning. Like that's not, you know, where your head should be. But yeah, for the highlight thing, I was like, wow, this is great. And then it happened the next week, and I was like, holy shit, 2 weeks in a row. I was like, they really must like the song. And it's the NBA had 30 million followers on Twitter. So I'm like, this is reaching the eyes and ears of a lot of people. Then it starts to, you know, affect the streams. Then the streaming numbers go up. Then a third week in a row highlights, fourth week in a row, et cetera, et cetera. And then I get an email that 2K21 is, they're going to put Motivation on the soundtrack. So I made the song in 2019 to get on 2K20.
Right.
And I spoke it, I swear on my life, I spoke this into existence every day for a year, almost every day, to get out loud to myself. This song will get onto a video game, whether it's this one or whether it's the next one, whatever, it's going to get on the video game. I got the email. That was probably the best moment, like that trumped everything else.
Wow.
Because I just sat back. I remember reading it off my laptop, and I just like laid down and I was like, holy shit. I was like,
this is real.
The power of manifestation and speaking things into existence.
Right.
It's real. And like, and then, you know, start playing the game, and then you hear it in the game and you're like,
do you have the game?
Shit. I have the game, yeah.
And when you play it, it's crazy.
All my friends, like kids I went to high school with and everyone, are like messaging me like, dude, it just came on. We're playing in the park.
That's so awesome.
Like, you know, we're playing, you know, we just heard your song. It got us hyped up for, you know, to play or whatever. So I was like, that's really cool. And then everything just started to snowball. Then people started to, big fitness YouTube pages.
I was going to say, it started to get reposted like everywhere.
Yeah. And like, and then, you know, Bradley Martin, the, you know, fitness influencer, was working out with Ronnie Coleman, the legend. And like, that's another, hobby of mine too. I like to, you know, work out and go to the gym. I like sports. I like music. So I was like,
perfect.
Best of all, you know, best of every world right there. And then, it, you know, the NBA started using it more in more highlights. Mm-hmm. The NHL picked it up on like MSG networks for the Rangers. And then it just started to snowball and just, it got bigger and bigger, affected the streams. Fitness influencers, like I said, started, you know, posting Instagram videos to it, listening to the sound, fitness YouTube pages, and it went crazy.
How did you keep yourself grounded during this time? Did you feel like you maybe were getting a moment of like overconfidence? Maybe I'm curious. Like when you get something that's starting to pop off like this, like it could be so easy to think that you're like the shit, right?
Yeah, that never. I just wanted to make another one.
Mm.
My thing was, what's next? And then I made a song called Championship.
Yeah.
And that was to get on the next game. Because the next year, 2K22, they had the same opportunity. Hey, you know, United Masters artists, like, submit your song. And we'll, I was like, maybe I could get on back-to-back soundtracks. They liked the last one. Didn't happen. I didn't get on the soundtrack. But that song ended up getting on NFL Network. And they were playing it every week. So it wasn't more like, oh my God, all this great stuff is happening with this one song. It was more like, I was so scared of like
losing the opportunity.
And more so like, I don't want people to just think I can make one good song and then it goes crazy and that's it.
Right.
And then like the rest of my music career. Oh yeah. Remember you when you had that one little cool moment, your song got on the little video game there. Like, that's awesome, bro. Good for you. Like 20 years down the line. Right. I'm like, yeah, that was great. I was like, what's next? Made another one. NFL Network, and then the UFC thing happened with Aljamain.
Yep.
And it was like...
amazing.
Yeah.
So it's cool to hear that when you wrote the song, it was with that intention.
Yes.
When you write... let's go into the album a little bit, because I got to spend, what was it? I feel like it was 6 months, a year?
A year, probably.
A year, probably.
Yeah.
You know, documenting the making of this album. And that was the first time I got to witness what it was like to make something like this. And I guess for that album, where did your writing stem from? What was the story that you wanted to tell with that album?
So first of all, I just want to start with, I still think that that's the best thing that I've ever created.
That album?
Yes, that album.
Dude,
in terms of like a body of work,
right.
Like that album, I'm still to this day, me and Dom and Ray, extremely proud of that.
I would be too. Even just me in the studio listening to you make it was truly an amazing experience that I got to be a part of.
It really was us four, like the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's why like I'm so grateful for that whole, you know, experience, you being there to obviously witness it all and help me tell the story. So to answer your question, it was really like, this was after the Motivation and Championship, all the songs that I was just talking about. And I'm like an album artist. I like to conceptualize a project and tell a story. Or if I'm not telling a story, I want to tell multiple stories in, you know,
right.
a body of work. That's a lot of the, you know, things today are single driven and everyone's attention span is, you know, minuscule.
It's so short.
It's insane.
TikTokified. Is that what it's
called? Yeah, people make TikTok songs, 20 second snippets, 10 second snippets, whatever it is. And like they put a single and then the next thing, like for that album, I was like, I don't want to. And this was what, 2000? When did we start doing that? 2021?
I think so.
I think it was
during COVID.
Yeah.
Because I think Ray was testing us. Or
Oh, yeah, yeah. The temperature thing we walked in. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But for that one, I was like, I need to make this album because it was basically a culmination of like all past relationships that I had and kind of where my mind was, you know, the years prior to the making of the album when I was in, school, when I was at college in particular, and, you know, these different relationships that I would have and kind of where I was at that point in my life. And how I was, you know, treating these people. And, it was just something that, like, really affected me in, like, a negative way. And
perception of how you were treated, like, you reflecting on it made you feel like shit? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It was more like, listen, like, I had these, you know, women or people in my life that, like, I really, really enjoyed their company. Like, they were really nice, genuine people. And I just was not looking for anything at that moment. And this happened multiple times. And it just like, I went about it the wrong way. And then in hindsight, you look back, maybe I should have did this different. Sure. Maybe I should have been more compassionate. Maybe I should have seen where they're coming from, how they felt. At that time, I didn't really take too much into, their perspective and how they felt. And just went about it the wrong way. A little bit of immaturity. I had a lot of growing up to do. And then when I finally got to the point where I could look back in hindsight and matured more and, you know, kind of just realized where I went wrong, how, you know, what I did wrong, what I said wrong. It was really not that the whole album was an apology necessarily. It was just more so telling all the raw parts and all the raw emotions that come with like different relationships and stuff like that. And the things that are said, the things that are done.
Is it like a form of therapy?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. That actually is a perfect word. It was like a really therapeutic album for me to make. And it was, you can't do that within one song.
Right.
That story could not be told with one single or two songs. It had to be a full body of work. It had to be fully thought out, very like mentally and emotionally taxing.
Yeah.
That whole year, like that whole... the making of the album.
Right. How do you, when you have this backstory to make this album and you have this story and, you know, Dom's a part of it, Ray's a part of it, there's some other artists that are a part of it. How do you want to present this body of work to them for them to be a part of this project. Do you explain what your vision is?
Yeah. So basically it's like, for example, what me and you did, like you were like, I get it. I understand it. I need to know, you know, what inspiration you're pulling from. Like, that's why I wanted you at the sessions, not only obviously because we wanted to shoot and kind of make this documentary of the making of the album, but like you were there listening and there feeling for the whole, exactly. feeling the yeah, whole exactly. experience of it.
Yeah.
And so before I would go into a song or before I went into the album, I explained it to Dom. You know, this is what I was going through at the time. And Dom, you know, everyone can relate. It's a very relatable type of right. thing. Relationships, failed relationships. And when you're, you know, a kid and you're immature, and not that I was necessarily a kid. I was a grown up. I just went about it as a kid, sure. realistically. So it's like kind of owning up to that. And everyone can relate to that. Everyone, you know, there's no perfect relationship. I'm sure, you know, you've had past relationships where like maybe you're like, you know, it ended for whatever reason and maybe I could have done this
different. It's a topic that people can all take something from and, you know, put it into their own life to be able to say something about.
Mm-hmm. And that was the whole message as to like how I kind of, you know,
explained it
yeah. to them. Yeah. Mm. And they got it immediately. Mm. And then, you know, I told them specifics.
Right.
This song, I'm talking about this because this happened in real life, where I'm taking, you know, a piece from this relationship that I had and a piece from that relationship, and I'm going to commingle them into this song. And this is what happened here. This is what happened here. This is why I'm saying this. This is why it needs to be, you know, conveyed in this mm-hmm. way artistically. Mm-hmm. This is why I need a singer on this. This is why the lyrics need to be like this. This is why, you know, and it was all so meticulous
yeah.
and so thought out that like everything had to have a purpose.
That is exactly what I noticed when I was there. The whiteboard, it had every song laid out, but every time we would go there, there'd be a different color in the room, different wardrobe, a different feeling. Mm-hmm. Why did you have such a strong feeling to making the overall vibe a certain way, whatever song you were making? Or like, why were you so strict maybe during the making of it?
I wouldn't have been able to make it mm-hmm. anyway else. You can't go into an album like that where you're kind of being extremely vulnerable and telling real life stories about, you know, how you hurt people in real life. Like, these aren't made up stories. So you need to like feel that energy. Like, we had a bottle of whiskey almost every session that we were in.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just for me personally, that helped me kind of convey my emotions and the pain really from experiencing all that. And it just made for, you know, better songs. The colors that we had, it was just whatever the mood was, the wardrobes. You really have to immerse yourself in that experience. And you can't do it any other way, because then it would sound forced.
Mm.
It would sound not genuine, not authentic. It wouldn't do the album any justice. It wouldn't do anyone any justice. Like, it was like full. And I've never done that before with a project before. That was my first time doing that. Like something
where'd
like that.
You learn that? Is there an inspiration that you took from like somebody, yes. an artist that has done that?
Kanye West.
Mm.
100%. So one of my favorite albums is, yeah, he's the master at that.
Right. He really is.
My Beautiful yeah. Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Okay.
So this was after the whole Taylor Swift thing. You know, everyone knows the backstory about that
right.
album and the creation of that album. He goes to Hawaii. He kind of disappears from the rest of the world, invites all of his music friends. He like rents his house out and he starts making the album. He makes everyone dress in, you know, black suits with the, you know, ties, black ties. And you can't be in the studio working on the album. All the engineers, all the artists that he had in there, producers, songwriters, everyone's wearing that attire. Like, he set up a mood. He set up a vibe. He had like a schedule every day. Mm. He'd wake up, you know, go to the gym, do what he had to do, eat breakfast with everyone that he's working on the album with, make it feel like
a community,
yeah, like family. A family.
Yeah.
Right. And then you go do, you know, go to the studio, and then you guys, like, the energy's up. You get you know, you want to be able to contribute to this experience. Mm-hmm. So it was like, that's where I got it from. Cause I looked at that, and he's done that for, you know, a couple other albums too.
Do you think that's going to be your process moving forward?
For albums? Yeah. I don't think I could do it any other way, mm-hmm. especially after that experience. Cause the product that came from that, from doing all those rules and having those rules, like, right. that's where I got that from. Yeah. Was from Kanye for that album in particular, because mm-hmm. he had like signs in the studio, no tweeting, no phones, right. no, you know, we're only here to work on music. Mm-hmm. Like, and there was a bunch of other funny things in there, and I like kind of took that and made my own rules Absolutely. With it.
And you're gonna fine tune it as you
fine tune it, yeah. And there, but he had so many other people. Obviously, he had a major studio or yeah. major label budget, and he's Kanye West, so he can get anyone he wants to work on the album. You know, I'm not Kanye West, so it was really just me, Ray, and Dom, and then obviously you were there the entire time too. And that was the cool part for you. Like, what was, I know you kind of touched on it a little bit from how it was from your perspective, but like while you're sitting there kind of setting up the camera, doing different angles and just like watching this whole experience, were you like, what the fuck is going on? Like, why does he have rules written down? Why is there a whiteboard?
I actually think I understood it. I think there's something to creativity and structure. I think they work simultaneously with each other. And I know that a lot of creative people, I find that I am more creative when there are some boundaries set or where there's like some walls that I can work within.
Some parameters.
And I think I realized that when I saw what you were doing is that you were setting this kind of like baseline. You were setting the tone. And then this tone is where we can work within. Mm-hmm. And then anything in between here is like free game, free creativity. But this is where we want to stay. So I think I recognized that, and I realized how important that was. And I noticed at towards the end that Dom and Ray stuck with it and really respected your decision to do that. And I think that showed a lot too for their commitment to you and the project.
Yeah, that's why I'm eternally grateful just for that whole experience. And I'm so glad that you were there to be a part of it, because you elevated that experience as well. Like, I don't know if I know we've had conversations about it. I was like, yo, thank you so much. The documentary was amazing. All the footage, all the stills you had were amazing. All the content that went with it. Meeting me out in...
Yeah. We were running on the boardwalk.
In February, in the middle of February.
Yeah.
Like, just, but like it's doing anything and everything. And that's why, like, it was the same thing with the documentary. So it was like a project within a project. So like there was the part where we were going to the studio making the music, and you were there for most of the sessions. But then there was like where me and you were making the documentary and trying to tell the story visually,
right?
You know, and that's a whole different
yeah.
thing. Me and you had to have conversations about, okay, why do we want to shoot this exactly. with like a limited budget? We could have done a lot more. We could have done something crazy but like, I feel like that's where our minds kind of like, all right, we're working with this budget.
Yeah.
And I feel like some of the best work
comes with having limitation.
Yeah.
Because you get to really push it as much as you can.
Exactly. And that's where you actually have to like be creative. And that's where you got to like push those boundaries a little bit. Like, obviously, like you said, with the parameters in the music, because there was parameters with the documentary.
Exactly.
And it was like, all the ideas I feel like we had, even if they didn't go into the final version of it, everything that we did, I love.
Everything was thought out.
It was very thought out. It was very meticulous. Yeah, it was like pinpoint, just like how the music was. Mm. And that's why like the album, I still think that is like a longevity album for me in particular. Like 10 years down the line, if somebody goes and, you know, it's all about catalog, building your catalog. If I have a song that blows up tomorrow, or a song that blows up next year, or in 5 years, they're going to go back down my catalog.
That album is still going
to be there. That album is still going to be there, and people are going to be like, this is a great body of work. So, like, maybe, you know, they like one song. Oh, let me see how many songs this kid has. Yeah. I'm not just a singles artist. I can actually make a well-thought-out body of work, both visually and sonically, I think, in my opinion. And I think, you know, years down the line, if it's not, you know, appreciated now, maybe who knows the future if I get onto a major label, or that's not really the goal.
Is your goal independent? Do you want to have your own label?
Yeah, eventually. Yeah. I think the goal is independent. I don't know about having my own label. I think
how do you release music now? Is it just through yourself? Or are you signed to somebody?
No, I'm not signed to anybody. Mm. I never was signed to anybody. United Masters is like, they help me out a lot.
The closest thing to it, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll do, they'll get me the sync licensing placements like Geronimo, the song I just released.
Sure.
There's actually a cool backstory with that real quick. Me and Dom made that like 2 years ago because a movie company hit me up and they like, yeah, like for Marvel movies, they do like the soundtracks and stuff like that. You know, we want you to make a song like Motivation or something like that. And we're going to, you know, pitch it for like Marvel movies or whatever, blah, blah, blah. We're like, okay. So me and Dom, man.
Pretty bad.
Yeah, so Dom, me and Dom get right to work. Dom produced that song. He produced the beat, me and him together. And we went to, you know, I wrote the song. Same thing. Same, it was intentional, just like how the Motivation and Championship was or were. And yeah, and then they never ended up using it. And then I, you know, was thinking, I was like going back, listening to some old songs like a couple months ago.
So this song's been in the vault for like a minute.
Yeah, and I forgot about it. Mm. And I was like, I listened to it again and I was like, wait, you know, remembering the NFL stuff from last year, which, you know, there's good money and there's really good money. You can make a solid career out of sync placements. I'm not saying that's all I want to do. But there's good money
in that. But that could be where the sustainability comes in.
And then it gives me room to create.
Create otherwise.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what Motivation kind of did for me. Mm. And that's what Championship did for me. Mm. So I'm looking at Geronimo as kind of like the third installment of that type of thing. Okay, maybe the song will do this because, you know, they've, United Masters has, you know, is interested in like getting sync placements with Geronimo.
Okay.
So they hit me up about it, emailed me, and they were like, hey, can you, because they just need to know the producer splits. They want the instrumental, a clean version of it, things like that. So I send them that a couple weeks ago, actually. And then, you know, here we are. They go and they pitch it. It could end up on an Adidas commercial, a Bose commercial, whatever. They have partnerships.
I was curious. I was going to ask you if you've ever considered joining, like, because for me, I'm a part of music licensing. Like, I download music for my videos, like Music Bed or like Epidemic Sound or Art. Like, there's a ton of different.
Library, right?
There's a whole library,
and it's
of
all
just artists.
Like copyright free. Like
copyright free music. Yeah. Is that like a part of the business that you're interested in? Is that
because that was never? It never was until I, you know, saw the first couple checks from it.
Right.
To be honest with you,
because the one company that I work with a lot, Music Bed. I think they pride themselves on like growing the musical artist, like not just as part of like this licensing thing. Like there's a few artists that are that are really honestly amazing, and they grow their own brand, they grow everything. But they're just, they have a part of their business that they host their music here.
That's probably the goal if I were to for myself. Like I want to be an artist outside of just the sync placements and stuff like that, but like, you know, maybe a part of my catalog is just good for that. Maybe some of the songs that I make are good for that, you know, type of stuff. So, you know, if it makes, you know, good money and I enjoy making those songs, and I've gotten messages from people that, hey, this song has really helped me out. I was, you know, depressed. I was down in life. This made me, you know, start working out again. This made me do this again. This made me, you know, get my ass off the couch and do this. This made me, you know, want to start, you know, training boxing. This made me, you know, so it's like, not only is the song good, you know, I believe that the writing is good. The song itself is good. I think that people actually
are feeling something
from like they actually get, you know, a sense of, you know, motivation from it, or that, you know, whatever it is.
That,
yeah, no,
love
no,
it.
Yeah, I had that.
I love it. I want to read this quote to you. I'm curious as to what you think of it. I feel like it's been going around a lot by Rick Rubin. The audience comes last. I'm not making it for them. I'm making it for me.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel on that?
I love that. I think it's absolutely 100% true. I love Rick Rubin. I love a lot of, you know, his quotes and stuff like that. But yeah, I think he's 100% right.
I think it speaks to authenticity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's like, to even go off that point, it's, I'm not saying that I make, you know, songs like that just to, you know, just to solely get on the video game. Like, yeah, that was intentional. That was the point. But it's like, the song is for me. Like, this is, I'm asking myself the same questions that I say in the song, that if a listener were to, you know, listen to it, they'd be like, oh, like, you know, I'm asking all these different questions in the song, but I'm also asking myself these same questions. What makes you tick? What's your, literally, what is your motivation? Why do you do what you do? Right. So you have to answer that internally first. And to Rick Rubin's point, like, yeah, you need to make something that resonates with you. That's the reason why you're making it. Yeah. I don't know how you can make something that you don't believe in yourself or that doesn't resonate with you. You know, it's you first. If you like what you're making and you like what you're saying and it's authentic to your values and your morals and who you are as a person, who you are as an artist, and you put it out, people are going to know that. They're going to feel that.
Yeah,
it's something that you can't fake, you know? So when the audience feels that and they connect with it, which was the really cool part about that song and all the different placements it got and stuff, it's like, I really, you know, live by those words. Like, I ask myself these questions all the time. You know, what am I doing this for? Mm. What is my motivation every day? And that obviously constantly changes. I want it to be, you know, have a sustainable life,
yeah.
You know, all these different things. But now, you know, touch it on like my daughter again, like yeah. She's another reason that gives me more motivation. And you can't just have motivation. Discipline, I think, is even more important than motivation.
Ooh, now we're getting there.
Yeah. Like
discipline is.
There's sometimes you wake up and you don't want to write a song or you don't want to film something or you're tired, man. You're. DP work and carrying around, because you carry around a lot of heavy shit. I see you.
My back hurts.
Like, dude. And maybe you're sore the next day and you're like, fuck, man, I don't want to.
Yeah. No, honestly, I feel that motivation sometimes is like not.
Not that it's not important.
Not that it's not important, but you can only get by, I feel, with motivation when you're feeling good. Mm-hmm. Motivation doesn't hit you the same when you're feeling like shit. What does is discipline.
100%. And that's like, that's why I think discipline is more important than motivation.
Yes.
Because to your point, exactly, like you hit it right on the head. Like motivation is only good when you're
feeling good.
When you're feeling good, when good things are happening to you, when your body isn't sore or your mind isn't taxed by whatever is going on.
Yeah, like I don't want to go to the gym at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning and I do it because I'm disciplined to do it.
It's a force of habit.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, writing music and writing songs. Like sometimes I'd be like, I don't have anything to write about. Mm-hmm. Like I have a writer's block right now. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, no, you know how you get out of a writer's block?
Fucking write.
You fucking write.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you're writing. You could write one sentence. Mm. Guess what? That one sentence didn't exist before, but since you actually sat your ass down and started writing something, now it exists.
Right.
Guess
what? I think that comes with focus too. And it's something, how easily we get distracted. Like you can get writer's block and you could easily just like, oh, I'm going to scroll on my phone now because I'm not feeling inspired or creative. But if you just decide to like, oh, I'm going to focus and write something, that first sentence comes, you immediately feel way more inspired to write that second sentence or keep going.
And so that's
really
all it is.
Focus.
It's in small increments.
Yeah,
and we're all guilty of it. We all go on our phones sometimes and you lose track of time and it's been an hour and then you're like, whatever I was working on before, like you forget about it.
Yeah.
Where it's not as important to you because you're like, whatever. Mm. And then you go about your day or whatever you're doing. And then that idea that could have been a life-changing idea, realistically, it just never exists.
Right.
Because you didn't focus.
Absolutely.
You weren't disciplined. You didn't have motivation or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But like that's the biggest thing for me is staying focused, staying disciplined. Mm-hmm. Yes, when I'm feeling good, motivation is great. But those other two things, discipline and focus, are the reason why I'll write a song that might change my life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because what if, you know, I was writing Motivation or Championship or whatever the song is, or the album, and I just, you know,
you didn't feel like doing it one day.
I didn't feel like doing it one day. And right. I was like, yeah, whatever. Those songs wouldn't have existed.
Exactly.
And that's also what I keep in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
Like, listen, you need to do this now because guess what? You write that one line, like you were saying, it makes you want to write a second line.
Right.
Before you know it, you have a whole song and you're like, wow, this is pretty good.
Right.
You go in, you record it, you tweak it, do whatever, you put it out.
I always tell myself that me next year is going to thank me for the work that I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like the shit that I don't want to do, the stuff that I'm like, oh, I really don't want to do this, but I know I have to. It's like the discipline thing. I always remind myself that like even me next month or like me tomorrow is going to be very thankful that I pushed through the thing that I didn't want to do today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps me a lot in terms of discipline.
I agree wholeheartedly, 100%.
I have two questions left. The first is, I want to go back to the album real quick, and I'm curious as to if you could reflect on it, and if there's something that you wish you did differently, or something that you wish you could have improved upon on that album, what would it be? It could be artistically, it could be songwriting, it could be whatever it is. I'm just curious as to what you feel like you could have improved upon.
See, I really don't think anything, in my opinion, artistically. I don't think it's a perfect album. I definitely think, you know, some songs could have been maybe a little shorter, like No Love Despair, for example, could have been a little bit shorter, but I love that song and every quality that comes with it. I love the fact that it's almost a 5-minute song, whatever. I think the marketing for the album, in terms of like, and more realistically, like the budget, I wish I had more money at that time, and I wish I put more money into the marketing at that time, because that album is too good to, and it not that I'm saying it fell on deaf ears, but it didn't do what I expected it to do. But like, I don't really, you know, meeting any of those expectations is just,
sure,
it's futile. Like, I don't think that the album, like, I think I expected too much out of it. Oh, it's going to get, you know, 100 million streams in the first year or whatever the heck. Like I said, I was still focused on numbers,
right,
instead of the actual story and the actual meaning of the album, which is why I look back on it in hindsight. The one thing I would change would be the marketing, but not the documentary, not what we shot, not any of the music that was made. Maybe songs could have been shorter here and there, whatever. Maybe I could have got another feature on it, whatever. But I think that that album is like amazing.
Yep.
And I just wish it got a little bit more marketing pushed into it. And not saying that it can't. That can happen any day, because guess what? Like, a new fan, those are new songs to them.
Absolutely.
Like, somebody that is, you know, introduced to my music, everything that I have is new to them. So it's, you know, that album, person could discover me 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and that would be new music to them. So, you know, you can never stop marketing your music.
Oh man, I was gonna end on the next one, but like, I think something that's really important on that topic is, recently I've been seeing a lot of people talk about why do we only promote our work once?
Like, you post it on your story.
Post it on your story once, you post it on your feed once, and then you forget about it. You spend months, years working on something, and then boom, done.
Yeah. Tyler, the creator. That? Tyler, the creator, said something like that. He was like, why?
Yeah.
That was his question. He was like getting interviewed somewhere, and he was like, why? Do you pull something out of your mind and spend countless hours and money
only
creating
to share
it
once?
Only to post it on your Instagram story once or whatever. Yeah, or your feed once.
I don't know. I find that to be interesting, but
I don't know. I think it's because we're always chasing the next thing. Maybe because you're like, all right, that's over with. Yeah, like, you know, hopefully, you know, I'll post it to my story. Somebody famous sees it, it blows up. All right, but I got to work on the next thing.
I wonder that. I also wonder, do you think there's like a awkwardness you feel maybe of continually sharing your work? You're like, you almost feel guilty of like,
annoying people.
I don't want to burden people with my work.
Yeah. Definitely. I don't know if you feel that way.
100%.
And you're like, why? Like, but why?
Yeah.
Like, who? And then you got to remind yourself, who gives a fuck what other people think? Who gives a shit?
Right.
Like, you're doing what you love. And most of the time, like, I don't want to speak for anyone else, but I guarantee you there's so many people out there internally that are like, I wish I had the balls to do something like that. I wish I had the guts to, you know, chase a passion. Absolutely. And put money towards it and actually double down on it and say, you know, and post it and post the artwork and everything's out there for criticism. Everyone can critique anything that you do. So it's like, people are going to, especially nowadays, people are going to complain about it anyway. They're going to shit on you. They're going to do whatever they can to bring you down from their own, you know, insecurities, problems, whatever they have going on in their life.
Absolutely.
It's like,
I agree.
If you're going to get that anyway, why not just put it out and promote it? That's pretty much it.
So I was going to ask one more, but now I have two more questions.
That's fine.
If you can think about, maybe a shorter answer, but I'm curious as to what you in your life at this moment, at this current stage in your life, what is success to you?
That's an interesting question.
It changes as your life moves.
Yeah. So stages. my definition of success, like a year or 2 years ago, is different than it is now, obviously. Mm-hmm. My priorities are different now. My life is completely different now than it was a year ago. Success for me at this moment, at this point in time, is being able to, like right now, have a roof over my head, have a beautiful girlfriend, eventually, hopefully within, the next couple weeks or so, have a beautiful, healthy baby, daughter, and be able just to make money doing what I love, like where I can support my family. That's it. That's really it. That's what success is to me. Make sure that everyone around me, my friends, my family is, physically healthy, emotionally healthy, spiritually healthy, mentally healthy, making sure that I'm the best brother, son, partner, dad, like friend that I can possibly be.
Yeah.
That's what success is to me right now at this point in time. That's kind of the core of what it is.
Sure.
But I just want to be able to do what I love for a living, make enough money where I can support everyone. And if anyone needs my help with anything, hopefully, I have the financial, situation where I can, help the people that I care about and that I love and maybe fund a something that they're passionate about.
I love
and
that.
Just keep that cycle going. And that's pretty much it. It's not anything crazy, not anything over the top. I don't care about any material possessions, nothing like that. That's pretty much it. If everyone in my circle, my family, my friends, and me, like if we're all good, everyone's good, that's good enough for me.
Love that. So last question is, you're sitting there. The person that's sitting here is that sophomore version of you listening to that B.O.B. instrumental, rapping for the first time to your friends and then going to that party in front of 20 people. You're sitting across from that version of you. What advice would you give that person?
Don't stop. Don't ever stop, no matter what happens in your life. There's going to be a lot of doubt. There's going to be a lot of days where you want to give up. There's going to be a lot of days where you don't think this is the right thing. There's going to be a lot of days where you might be embarrassed about what you're trying to do. Just don't ever stop. Don't ever let the passion that you've had since I was, if I'm talking to myself, since you were a kid, don't ever let that die. Don't ever stop making music. I don't care if you don't make a dime making music. As long as you keep that passion alive, don't ever stop making it. That's what makes you you. That's what makes you a great artist, a great person. Like, music is one of the biggest things in your life. So just please don't ever give up on it. Don't ever stop. No matter how bleak the situation looks, just keep going. That's it.
Beautiful. All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So where can people find you, your music, share, whatever you got?
Just C.Henry on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube. Colin Henry NJ on Instagram, through all socials. That's the same handle. So follow me, shoot me a message if anyone wants to work out there. If anyone has any positive messages to share, I love having conversations with the people. So
amazing. Thank you, dude. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hopefully you enjoyed today's episode, everyone. Have a great day. Peace out. So thank you for tuning into another episode of the Creative Gap Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, there are a ton of other episodes for you to listen to as well. Check us out on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you want to get your podcast, you can find it. And now that you're watching this, you could also watch the full video podcast on YouTube. Also, be sure to check us out on Instagram at Creative Gap for future updates, upcoming guests, and a lot of short clips. And if you want to support the podcast in a deeper way, feel free to join our Patreon community. And for those of you who already joined the Patreon community, thank you. And for those of you who are new to the show, welcome. Hopefully you enjoy it. And for those of you who have been here for a long time, thank you. So that's all we got for you today. Hopefully you enjoyed the episode. We'll see you next time. Peace out.